The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Is that Kiss Morose?
No one else did the rest of the song with me. You left me alone.
Welcome to a special episode of Podcast Beyond. This is episode 442.5,
yeah,
I believe. Yeah, we're here. This is not our normal episode of the week. We have a normal episode. We're going to have a normal episode next week. But we wanted to talk because the embargo is up for Uncharted 4 coverage.
Yeah.
Our review is currently live by Lucy O'Brien. You should check that out right now. But the three of us have played quite a bit. Brian's already finished it.
Yep.
Andrew and I are probably a little over halfway.
Yep.
And so we're going to have an actual full spoiler cast going up, you know, probably when the game hits, you know, the weekend the game's out, so that once you finish it, you can watch that. We're going to try to keep this relatively spoiler-free. We're not going to go over giant plot points. We're not going to tell you who kisses or who dies or who kisses a dead man.
Or who dies while kissing.
Who dies while kissing. Yep. But we just, you know, sort of as IGN's PlayStation guys, we wanted to, you know, talk about our thoughts on what we've played so far.
Yeah, I'd say like a good tone that we'll try to keep for this is like if you've consumed all the media for this game already, you've watched the E3 presentations and the demos, and you've seen gameplay footage from PSX, all the other things, we're going to talk about kind of like what it's like to play that kind of stuff that you've seen. We won't really tell you how the game begins or really how it ends or anything like that, but let's get right into it. We'll be as spoiler free as possible. So I really enjoy. Let's go right off the bat.
Yep.
Let's get the really good things that
rip
right off the
Band-Aid
bat.
Off.
I'm gonna make a very declarative statement right off the bat. This is far and away, not even close, the best looking video game ever made.
Yep.
I don't even think that's up for debate. I was trying to think while playing this what before that I'd played recently. I would say the ones that came closest were Star Wars Battlefront is absolutely gorgeous. The Order 1886, phenomenal looking game. Both of those games have their own issues, of course. But if we're talking just graphics, and I'll also say Rise of the Tomb Raider is doing a lot of stuff that this game's doing, I would say even better. There is just nothing like walking through a jungle or walking over a field or scaling a structure and seeing a vista in the background here. There's nothing like that in any game I've ever played.
And it's crazy because it's playable.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a cutscene and then you go into the game and you're like, oh, that was a noticeable hit.
So,
like,
yeah, and it's
the
funny
seamlessness between gameplay and cutscene is like nothing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's very evocative of the last time I've had an experience like this was playing Uncharted 3, which I don't know if you guys probably remember the moment where Drake wakes up in the desert and he's standing there for a minute and you're like, the cutscene's going to start. And then you're like, no, I control this.
Yeah.
And you pick up the controller and you start moving it. I had that happened two or three times during this game where I was watching something else happened, and I just kind of hung there for a moment being like, oh, what are they waiting for?
I won't say what it is, but literally the beginning of the game did that to me.
Yeah.
Like the very first time you take control, I was like that. I was like, Oh, okay. Like, it was like that weird, like, it took me that extra 30 seconds.
Some of the best character models I've ever seen in a game.
Oh,
just watching, like, individual beads of sweat and wrinkles on clothes and just, like, you'll see, like, tufts of grass in the field as your character walks over it. I was watching a very particular moment where your character was leaving footprints. And my wife walked in the room and was just like, is that character leaving footprints?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you can actually see the indentations where that's happening.
Yeah, there's, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff we've seen so far. Sort of, there's that jungle action set piece from PSX a year and a half ago. And then there was the Madagascar stuff from E3.
Yeah.
And yeah, those are both stunning. But there's like this has such a cool globe-trotting feel to it, to where you'll go to the middle of the savannah and you'll be like, holy crap, look at this. Like, look at the color palette here. Mm-hmm. You go to Scotland and it's there's snow on the ground and you're wandering around this sort of mountainside field and you're just like, nothing looks like this. Nothing has and that sort of photorealism.
Totally.
And that, it's that color palette. Like you were talking about the Order. The Order is gorgeous, but it uses a fraction of the colors available to you.
Well, yeah, and it's also – that's a really good point in the globetrotting essence of something like the Order is very limited, right? Mm-hmm. You're sort of set to a very specific environment. And this game, like a good Indiana Jones movie, is constantly writing in a way for your character or a reason, a justification for your character to visit something completely beautiful and new. Mm-hmm.
And it feels like to me that's where the biggest Last of Us inspiration might have come from because I think like other Uncharted games have done plenty of this, but I think for me, everything feels so distinct. It's not just like, oh, like this is this city and this is a different city. Like, no, it's totally different environments mm-hmm. and each one has kind of their own identity. Like it's very rare. I don't know, if you call out a specific chapter of like one of the previous Uncharted games, I don't feel like I would immediately recognize it. Whereas mm-hmm. here, like I'm always going to know what people are talking about with Madagascar because it feels so different from like the area before that.
Yeah. The Last of Us thing is interesting as well because I felt that Naughty Dog completely mastered the sort of that beauty that you find in a dilapidated structure.
Yeah, totally.
That has then been overrun by in sort of like the what was that Will Smith movie?
I am Legend. Yeah.
Has this amazing, just all these vistas of this moment of being like, that was a structure lived in by something, and now it's covered in moss and grass. Uncharted 4 has a lot of stuff like that, but without that sort of the sadness that comes with a zombie apocalypse of being like, life ended here. I mean, you have an idea that life existed at some point in this rundown village or this mountaintop area, and that people have long since abandoned it or died. And you get that sort of that beauty of finding a tomb or a temple in the same way Indiana Jones does, where there's a skeleton there, but there's also gold and treasure.
Yeah.
They do that really, really well.
And they also do these like tiny effects. Like there'll be, you'll be walking through this old, you know, decrepit castle and beams of light of sunlight will be coming in and you'll see like dust particles floating in the air. You're just what is this? How is this possible?
Yeah.
There's a scene where Marty and I were just playing a part where you pass by some marble, like it's like a little marble pillar.
And you're passing by a marble pillar,
and I had to stop. Like I was controlling, I had to stop and like keep walking back and forth and just look at the reflections in the marble because I was like, someone made this. Like this isn't like a real. This isn't a video with reflections. Like this is like a bunch of like mesh over a texture and like how.
Yeah.
Well, you get a lot of like behind the scenes developer stories of people being like, and at one point in 2012, they let 10 of us go to Italy for a week and a half and take pictures of walls. And all those walls are in our game.
Yeah.
And Naughty Dog's like, oh, that's cool. Like, we built Italy. Like, you can walk around it. And I think what's really impressive is there's a lot of indoor environments in this game that are just decidedly human. And they feel very lived in. You'll be in, like, a living room or a kitchen or something like that. I'm not saying that, like, there's an entire level in this game where Nathan Drake has to, like, treasure hunt in a kitchen. But there are, in traditional Uncharted fashion, there are ways, like, you know, you saw, what was it, Uncharted 3 began with that bar scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And even had the young Nathan Drake moments, which you get hints of in some areas here. And walking around those environments and looking around at a bookshelf and seeing how one of the books is slightly ajar, or looking at posters that are a little bit crooked on the wall. Like, they feel very human and very lived in.
Yeah. Again, without spoiling it, like, you walk around Nate's house at a certain point, and you're like, oh, this just feels like a regular house.
Yeah.
Like the bathroom feels like a bathroom. Like the hallways feel like hallways.
And he's
like,
got that he's got that CD player where he's only listening to the Uncharted theme song.
Yeah. And he's got that
vuvuzela
in the background.
Okay, I'm really glad you mentioned that word. This is the only thing we're to spoil. This is not a spoiler at all. There are no vuvuzelas in this game.
Yeah.
moment what of silence for the Vuvuzela. Yeah.
What the hell? How do you have a moment of silence for Vuvuzela?
Moment of loudness for Vuvuzela.
We've been talking. If Vuvuzela's had a funeral, they would be the loudest things in the world.
There's one thing every episode of Beyond for the past year. I think they heard these stupid instruments.
I think they heard
purposely.
I yep. think I think the good people at Naughty Dog yeah. heard this show. They know we've run the Vuvuzela joke into the ground, and they won't let us have it anymore.
It's very
now when Nathan Drake dies, which happens quite a lot, there is no more. There's just noises. And other people yell, but
yeah, it's just like Sam yelling, oh, dang.
So it is like, and that's what's interesting, right? That's actually an interesting segue somehow, because you talk about Nate dying, you know, like losing track of where you are. Most Uncharted games, I feel like maybe even to a fault, it's like, where am I going to go? I'm going to climb that red thing. Like, you always know what you're doing. It's like very clear looking at the environment. In this game, it looks so good that I almost got lost sometimes yeah. because there aren't things in the environment that stand out as where I'm very yeah. obviously supposed to go next.
I had a very distinct scene leading up to the Madagascar section you saw where two characters are in the Jeep and they're driving along, and mid-conversation, I made the wrong turn and drove off the cliff. And you just see this, like, ragdoll car. They're just like, yeah, and that's why we got to get to the... Ah!
And that's how...
I was laughing so hard.
And that was a thief's end.
I was like, I didn't see that coming because it's just so pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there really isn't a lot of, like, video gamey moments of, like, this is the glowing block you need to get on, you know? Yep. Like... a lot of people thought this game would be sort of more gritty and serious, and in some ways it is, but I think a lot of that, where that tone really shines through, is sort of just in the basic presentation of it, in that you don't really feel like constantly things are big glowing ladders mm-hmm. or big glowing boxes and stuff like that. A lot of the puzzles and even the set pieces and structure of the level design feels a lot more grounded in reality, and it's sort of less campy and over the top.
Yeah.
Which I think...
Well, but it's both. Like I would say the things that are the campy Indiana Jones puzzle feel bigger than they ever have.
Sure.
Maybe even in a bad way, because I do think that like every time it like introduces you, like every puzzle has like 9 parts to it basically. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're like, oh, that was a really clever Indiana Jones style puzzle. And you do it like 8 more times until you're complete with that puzzle basically.
Right.
And I think that's almost a, it's spectacle wise really impressive, but it's almost a fault in terms of gameplay.
Yeah. So yeah. Before we dig into that, the one last thing I want to touch on in terms of stuff I think all of us unanimously love is the acting,
the performances
and the writing.
Yeah. So
whether it's, you know, just the individual interactions, and it's not just something like, well, it's easy because you already have Nate and Elena and Nate and Sully, you know, you have 4 games worth of relationship that you're working on. But like Nate and Sam right from the get-go, like mm-hmm. you feel that bond between them, and
totally.
Like you legitimately understand Nate's motivations for sort of that, you know, that whole sort of tropey, like, all right, I'm coming out of the game for one last score.
Right.
You get that, and you understand it, and there's just amazing character moments and dialogue and subtle things.
Yeah.
That, like, the way Nate and Elena speak is the way a couple talks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have their own shorthand, they have their own jokes. Like, it's not... They're not talking to advance the plot, although the plot is being advanced. They're talking the way human beings talk.
That's a really good way of putting it. I didn't really think about it like that.
Yeah.
I guess because... Like a good camera in a game, the best dialogue in a video game is when it's so good that it doesn't bother
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels natural. It feels like there's a rapport there. Like when we do this show, it's not like, what do we say? What do we do? Mm-hmm. We're not rehearsed. We just come in and talk because we have that with each other. We've known each other for years. And I think that totally rings true. I was incredibly wary from the jump of the shoehorning the long lost brother thing into the 4th game.
Yeah.
That sounds, I mean, that's like some comic book bullshit.
Yeah,
you know, or like something you'd get on like the 3rd or 4th season of a TV show. Like, his brother's here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like,
hey, Dexter, this is Dukester.
It's right. Dukester.
I mean, didn't they literally write in Dexter's brother in one season?
Was his name Dukester?
Do you remember his terrible brother who was also a murderer, but like he didn't have control of the dark path? He looked like John Mayer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's like season 1.
Like, you joke, but they did that.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. Was that season 1?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Sorry, spoilers for Dexter.
Yeah,
spoilers for Dukester.
We said we were going to spoil Uncharted.
We're going to spoil a bunch of other things by accident.
Yeah, but no, I totally agree. Like, it is amazing how... And also, like, part of that is because it's Troy Baker, right?
Yeah.
It's because, like, you have, like... Like, the fact that you have, like, Laura Bailey, Nolan North, Troy Baker, like, you have, like, some of the best people in this industry acting in this game.
The best in our industry,
yeah.
I would
yeah.
say.
Yeah,
you know?
And, like, I mean, like, they're all, like, instantly, like, even, like, the introduction of Nadine, or, like, the way, like, Nadine and Sully will talk, or any of those things, like, it's so impressive how, like, it just works. Yeah. Like, I never feel like, oh, those two characters, like, weren't believable. There's no, like we talk about Daredevil a lot and how I hate Foggy. Like, the character Foggy in Daredevil always feels like he's acting. He always feels like he's trying really hard and he feels out of place. There is no character like that literally at all in this game. Even, like, side characters you only see in one scene. Like, I just feel like across the board, the performances are so good, so believable, and, like you said, so human.
Mm-hmm. That said, one of the issues that comes with that is that the game is somewhere between the 12 and 16 hour mark, depending on how much you put into it, how fast you go, what setting you're playing, what difficulty setting you're playing on.
If you're going to explore for the treasures.
Yeah, I mean, even just like some rudimentary exploration of the treasures or running past them at all, you can actually even run past a lot of the combat scenarios.
Well, even just appreciating the world, like you mentioned, like the house or like any environment, like there were moments where like the game is so pretty where I wanted to stop and take it all in.
What's really fascinating, I don't know if you guys noticed this, in the settings or when you go to check out your stats, it tells you how long you've been playing and how long you've been standing perfectly still.
Yeah, which I love.
Which I found, like, I was like, wow, I've stood perfectly still for like an hour, and that wasn't to pause or to go pee or whatever. That was to basically just like
move the camera around
to gawk.
Yeah.
Like, I had 2 hours of gawking, of just standing on a hill and being like, gawk, gawk. So I would say that even, like, the best written game in the world with the best characters in the world at the 14 to 16 hour mark starts to feel a little bit like, well, maybe there could have been some stuff. It was like when I read about the 4 hour cut of Batman vs. Superman, I'm like, okay, well, this isn't a great movie. Making a 4 hour version of it wouldn't save it. But I don't think anything story driven, and Marty, you and I were talking about this, almost nothing story driven in a video game should be 16 hours long. Because that's more than a season of some of the best TV shows I've ever seen.
And especially something that doesn't have, something like Grand Theft Auto or Witcher or Metal Gear, like, there's so much open to your disposal to where, like, the reason those games are long isn't necessarily because of the crit-pat story.
Yes.
It's long because of the, well, I did two missions and now I want to go wander around. I want to see what's over there and I just want to play in the sandbox.
Yeah. Like, that's what you miss by being kind of a faux open world versus, like, a game that is, like, more of a sandbox. Like, you accept a side mission or you choose not to accept a story mission and you explore. Whereas in this game, it's really interesting because, like, it's definitely more open than any Uncharted game, but you can't really leave the critical path.
No, and ultimately, it's like, everything funnels you into wherever you need to go next.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird.
Think of, like, rivers and canyons, basically. Mm-hmm. That's the way this game is designed.
It's almost, and I don't know why. I don't know why I found it more disruptive than Last of Us, but it almost feels like more than ever the gameplay is in the way of me getting to the next story beat. Like, I'm doing things almost as a chore because I'm, like, because the story is really good and I really like the game. It's so pretty and I want to see the next place that I feel like I, like, just can't wait for this shootout to be over so I can see what's coming next.
Sure.
And it's, Brian and I were talking this morning. We talked about, you go to a restaurant and you order your favorite meal. And they're like, okay, do you want super salad? And you're like, salad. And they're like, okay, do you want a Caesar salad or a house salad? And you're like, a house salad. And they're like, okay, do you want blue cheese dressing or Italian dressing? And you're like, Italian dressing. And they're like, okay, about that soup, do you want mushroom soup? And it's like, just let me eat the meal, Jesus. Yeah. And, like, that's what this starts to feel like after a certain point. It's like, you, everything in it where, like, I'm like, oh, this mechanic's really smart, or I like this weapon, or I like this set piece, then you do it four more times. And I just got to the point where I'm like, God, this is fun, or this is interesting, or this puzzle was smart, but, like, I get it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's really only, like, 5 or 6 fundamental things you're doing in every Uncharted game. And for people thinking that this would be the one that introduced a ton of new mechanics, it isn't really.
No.
I mean, one of the new things they have is the rope, which is cool. And it introduces some sort of interesting scenarios and a lot of sort of, like, last minute gasping for breath, rushing down a hill, shoot the rope into the air, grab it and swing across the canyon. When you link a bunch of those things in a row, it's awesome, and there's someone sitting next to you watching you play, it's unparalleled.
Yeah, you're just like, I did that.
And there's some scenarios where it comes into play where it's actually not as interesting as it is kind of goofy, where you'll be swinging on a rope and shooting a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it from their perspective, being like, what the fuck?
Who's that man?
Like, why is a guy on a rope shooting me? Yeah. There's combat, which is basically like either stealth, melee, which is not very useful if you're playing on one of the harder difficulties, and then shooting, obviously. You can stealth kill your way through many of the environments.
And, in fact, there are interesting stealth aspects. Like, there's high grass you can hide in.
Right.
And also, there's an interesting pretty much every mission, you're fighting alongside, you have someone alongside you, whether it's Sully or whether it's Sam.
Yeah.
and the AI companions will adapt to your playstyle.
Yeah.
So if you're like, nope, guns ablaze, and they're like, all right, we're going to pull out guns too. Whereas if you say stealthy, it'll be like, all right, as long as you want to be stealthy, we'll be stealthy too, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah, and I also noticed, since there's a lot of stuff in The Last of Us, I noticed that there weren't many of those moments where, like, Joel is hiding and Ellie runs across the room like, hi, everyone!
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of that. So, but back to what we were saying about pacing. I mean, if there's combat scenarios and then there's the climbing on the walls and jumping off the walls while they collapse, and then there's running from something that's either coming towards you or you're running away from the camera or chase sequences, those are really some of the most fundamental things that you're doing throughout the game, and that's fine. But by the 16-hour mark, you've pretty much done a lot of them multiple times. Mm-hmm. They've introduced the rolling box crate puzzles from The Last of Us, which I'm very surprised made it into this game, let alone made it into this game probably almost dozens of times.
Yeah. And it does that problem that like Bioshock Infinite had, and like Zelda Skyward Sword had, and a lot of games have, where it's you get to where you're going, and they're like, oh, you can't get in this way, got to go around. So it's like you spend so long getting to that door, and then you get to that door, and then you find an alternate path around. And it's like, yeah, like story-wise, once or twice, that's fine. But like when that's basically every gate in the entire game that you're trying to get through.
I was really fascinated. I would love to see the script of this game to see if only how many times you can pull out a highlighter and write in those redundancies right there. Because there are so many times where it's like, door's locked, let's find another way around. And the characters are actually almost joking about it towards the end of the game, or even halfway through the game. There are a lot of moments of just like, well, it's nothing we haven't done 100 times before, or, well, we got to do that because, you know, have you noticed how...
Yeah, and the same thing happened in The Last of Us with those palette puzzles where Ellie didn't know how to swim, and you'll get to a part where we'll be like, another palette, and she's like, I should learn how to swim. I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
Like, when the characters in the game are acknowledging a problem that everyone's having with the game, like, that's a problem.
So, and it's weird to complain about a game that's this gorgeous and, you know, mostly this fun, that's 16 hours long, because it seems like we're complaining that we got too much of something. Yeah. But I would argue that the fact that this game is probably longer than 2 and 3 combined is actually a detriment. Because for a game to be such Uncharted is far and away the most sort of Hollywood cinematic, Michael Bay, Indiana Jones, and I mean that in all the best tendencies possible, of video games, right? And that means it's something that you want to be able to... The reason I love Indiana Jones is I can put on my favorite Indiana Jones movies and watch them over and over and over again. And I have a harder time doing that with a 16-hour long game. When I beat The Last of Us, I had very little reason to go back. Part of it because it was such a dark, harrowing experience, and because I made my decisions and kind of want to leave it at that. But Uncharted games, I find myself replaying multiple times. I've beaten 2 and 3 a bunch of times. 1 less so, of course. But Uncharted 2, I've probably beaten that game 4 or 5 times straight through. Uncharted 3, 2 or 3 times. I played the Vita one straight through twice just because it's a fun experience. I'll be less inclined to do that for a game that's 16 hours long.
Yeah.
Because to me, having a cinematic experience that's also 16 hours long is no longer a cinematic experience anymore. Yeah. That's actually daunting and overwhelming and damn near exhausting.
Yeah.
I found myself calling out the tedium in this game a lot more than I thought I would have. And you, Goldfarb, were talking a lot about how you felt most scenes almost dragged on too long. Most moments seemed 25% to 75% too long. I think a lot of it's terrifying. It's one thing to go in and cut scenes from a movie. It's another thing to go in and cut scenes from a video game. And it's another thing to watch something in a movie that's sort of short and tedious, like the scene in Jurassic Park when Dennis Nedry hooks up the wench.
He hooks up with a winch.
He would. No, he hooks up a winch to a tree and pulls it down, and the Dilophosaurus comes out, spits in his face, kills him, and the Barbasol thing with the DNA rolls down the hill. Spoilers. When you do, there's multiple winch scenes in this game.
Yeah.
No winch scenes, but they're very evocative of like Arkham Knight, which are some of the worst moments in that game.
Yeah.
And you do them a lot in this game. And in a movie, it takes 3 seconds. In a game, it takes 10 minutes.
And that's what I don't get. Like, we were talking about, I mean, like, the natural comparison is Tomb Raider, right? And I was saying this morning, like, for me with Tomb Raider, when I'm playing that game, I'm having fun. I feel like mechanically that game is very smart. But I don't care. Like, I don't care about anyone in that game other than Lara.
You can't name any character other than Lara. Yeah.
And whereas in this game, like, I love every character. Like, I feel like I've been through so much of these characters, and I care so much about the story, and I want to get there. And because of that, it almost makes me less inclined to want to spend 10 minutes hooking up the winch or whatever. And, like, there are awesome things that come from that. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's really cool set pieces associated with that. But it just feels like there's so much tedium in between them.
So the biggest, I think... the best puzzle scenarios in games, the best cutscenes in games, the best combat scenarios in games are the ones where they wrap up and you're like, man, I want more of that. I'm hungry for more of that. And that's good. Like, when you finish a puzzle in Portal and you're like, that was awesome. Man, I wanted more of that.
Something Resident Evil 4 was really good at that, right? Like, they were like, here's this third-person action-adventure game where you're shooting and, you know, it feels kind of arcadey. But then you get to a puzzle that was just dumb enough to be able to pass easily, but just smart enough to make you feel accomplished. Yeah. And they never really overstayed their welcome.
Whereas with this, I feel like almost every facet, every shootout, every climbing, platforming puzzle, every actual, like, solve this tomb puzzle, all of them, you get to a point where you're like, all right, I understand everything you're telling me right now, and I just want this to be over.
Yes.
And then 5 minutes later it is, and you're like...
It doesn't have that thing with, like, The Witness where it's like you're learning a language. Like, it's like you actually made that metaphor for me. It's like when you're playing The Witness, it's like, okay, you learn nouns and verbs, and then you learn, like, about, like, subject and predicate, and then you learn about how to conjugate verbs and how to, like, and by the end of that game, you've combined all these mechanics together, and you are solving these crazy complicated puzzles based on what you've learned. And I feel like this obviously isn't a puzzle game, but, like, in Uncharted, there's no sense of momentum or building.
It teaches you everything in the tutorial.
Exactly. Yes.
Literally everything in the
which
tutorial.
Which is also everything they taught you in the tutorial of the first Uncharted game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing
the
about this game.
The rope is the only true new mechanic.
Well, there's the rope and there's that stabbing hook thing that you stab into the gritty looking walls. Actually, like, to be straight up, the two newest mechanics in this game are not directly lifted, but absolutely in the new Tomb Raider game. Mm-hmm. And the difference between those, and we've talked about this on the show before, is that Lara Croft has a bow and arrow, and she has this rope that you can upgrade, and she's got this hook that you can upgrade, and hook shot, and all these other weapons. And she's got this arsenal that by hunting and poaching and trapping, she can create things and build things and build up this weaponry.
And my Lara is different than your Lara, because I put all my stats into combat stuff, and you want the exploration stuff.
Yeah, or I wanted to upgrade my shotgun rather than my stealth, or this, and this. Nathan Drake doesn't have that. And I don't know if that's necessarily something he needs, but he has no connection to his weapons. He has no connection to his items.
Which is weird, because Joel did. Like, The Last of Us did let you slowly upgrade stuff.
Which I don't understand, right? That was a very weird thing. Like, The Last of Us had those kind of minor RPG elements. And even, like, one thing I liked about The Last of Us is it's got a ton of stealth sequences, but it's also got those moments where you can be like, I'm going to pick up this brick, and I'm going to throw it over there to alert somebody to get him moving over there. Mm-hmm. Uncharted 4 has just as many stealth sequences, if that's how you choose to play it, but none of those options. So you can never really be like, I'm going to get that guy's attention. You like I would throw a grenade every now and then, so a bunch of people would be like, what the fuck? But that's different than a brick, because a brick, someone goes, huh? But if 8 guys are on a job and a thing blows up, they're like, okay, you got all of our attention now.
I mean, a lot of these things for me are nitpicks. Like, I am really, really enjoying the game so far. Yeah. And I find myself thinking about the story today, like, because we played 8 hours yesterday, and it's like I'm in chapter 12 right now, and I believe there are 22.
21 and an epilogue.
So I'm, you know, a little more than halfway through the game, and, like, I'm excited to play more. I really am. Absolutely. And it's like, none of these things make me not recommend the game or anything. I still really like it, and I love Uncharted, and I love these characters. I don't know, I think it's just been a while, I guess, is ultimately what it comes down to. And I've played, like, because since Uncharted 3, I've played The Last of Us and I've played 2 Tomb Raider games. I think that has just colored what I expect from games like this.
Well, that and the fact that Naughty Dog released the Uncharted Collection just a few months ago. And I think that that was a good primer for people who had never played those games before. And I think it was a good refresh for people who have. But it was also a lot of Uncharted to play in a row, to the point where playing Uncharted 4 a few months later, I was expecting a lot more new out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, like we said, the performances are incredible. They're unmatched. And the visuals are unmatched.
Sure.
But the gameplay is very, very straightforward. And I won't say standard, but it's Uncharted. Mm-hmm. And I actually started to feel a little bit of franchise fatigue about halfway through this game, because I kept waiting for that new thing to be implemented. And some of the things that I think we were sort of like, not, I won't say duped, but we kind of hyped ourselves into thinking would be bigger things than they actually were the dialogue trees, which really only pop up less than a handful of times in this game. And from what I've talked to people in the office and what I've experienced myself, largely impact nothing significant.
Sure.
Making different choices there do not change the endings of the stories.
No one's going to live or die based on a dialogue.
And the other things were the large open world environments, which there are very few of, if not almost none. And even within those things, they're not nearly as sandboxy as you would expect them to be. Like, Tomb Raider does open up into these huge open world environments where you can decide, I'm not going to go on to the next course of the meal.
Because there's 10 things to do here.
Yeah. That's not the case here. You can find some hidden treasures if you go looking, but those are all completely optional. Mm-hmm. Everything else is sort of just like, this is happening, but I'm going to eventually funnel from this canyon back into this river.
I will say those Tomb Raider environments suffer from what we're talking about at the beginning of this, though, which is like, I can't name any of those environments to you.
Of course
they don't feel distinct because they're so big and because you spend so much time like, all right, I got to find these five bear paws to
There's also too much to do in
there. Yes,
I would say there's I remember Miranda Sanchez, who works here, Yay Anime Club, was doing the guide for Tomb Raider, and she went from being like, I love this game, it's my favorite game of the year, to being throwing the controller down out of frustration and like audibly sighing and storming out of the room. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, I'm so sick of these collectibles.
Yeah.
So I think there is a fine line between the two. Although in terms of like, I don't think this is a spoiler, but in terms of set pieces, I would say the one of the biggest ones in the game was revealed to you in its entirety at E3. Mm-hmm. And the E3 demo that we saw was that Jeep sequence that ends with Nathan Drake swinging into that pole and the screen going black. There was also a behind closed doors,
which eventually got released. That's on the internet.
So that's all out there.
Yeah, where
if you were in a media blackout on all that stuff, I mean, then I don't know why you're listening to this right now. But thank you either way. But that's really one of the biggest, like, sort of like Uncharted 2 train plane or Uncharted 3 plane sequences. Those things that are just like totally over the top, totally Indiana Jones, totally, you know, Michael Bay.
But you only get like four of those.
Yeah, there's really only a handful of those in the game, and the biggest one you've seen already. So, I mean, kind of measure expectations with that. That being said, it's more about the environments and the beauty of them, the diversity in locales, scaling them and watching them collapse, as they always do, because that's Nathan Drake loves jumping on stuff and breaking it. I got to go around.
Yeah. And there are, like, you know, we're going to have a full spoiler cast where we you know, everyone who's finished the game, we're going to talk about things in depth. Like, there are so many moments, like, there are a handful of amazing, surprising things that I want to talk about that we can't.
Yeah.
Just things I wholly did not expect that I'm like, oh, that is one of the cutest things I've ever seen.
I mean, I don't think any of the three of us even have dug in that deep to the point where I'm sure there's Easter eggs in this game
that we completely
missed. I'm sure there's Last of Us stuff. I mean, if you think about it, was it Uncharted 3 had the newspaper clippings?
Yep. About the virus of the cordyceps. Head guys?
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe Naughty Dog's next game is being teased in this game.
Yeah.
I'm hoping there's references to other stuff they've done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here. There's a lot to unpack. It's a huge game. All in all, like, I do recommend this game.
I think
it's something every PlayStation gamer needs to experience. I don't know if it's something that's going to stick with me. If I was to rank the Uncharted's, I still think 2 is on top. It's going to take me some time to figure out if I like this one more than 3. I think I do. That being said, 2 is still far and away the winner here.
I'm excited to finish it. I think for me, largely because of story stuff and not mechanical stuff, 3 is probably edges out 2 for me, just because I like the story so much. I think mechanically, like, I don't need to fight off any spiders or whatever ever again. But I think, like, I really like the story of 3. And so for me, it'll depend on how this ends. Like, I'm hoping to play a lot more tonight and maybe finish it tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'm actually... Was it Marty? Was it you I was talking about this morning? I was talking about it with Jose Otero about how, like, we're going to see the first initial wave of reviews, and they're going to be incredibly strong and positive. And there'll be some, you know, some people that come in under the.
Being said, I think this is not knowing, you know, having this recorded this before the internet, I think this is going to score lower than 3 and 2 did.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it'll score lower than 2. 3 was a weird thing.
I know it scored lower than 3 and 2 on IGN. And that's the one review I know.
Well, that's because Greg Miller gave 3 a 10. No, and you know what? I was with him, and I think a lot of people were. And you're still with him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Uncharted 3 is one of those games where, like, a 10 in IGN does not mean perfect. And, like, that doesn't mean...
because nothing is perfect.
Yeah. Right. So, like, yeah, Uncharted 3 has flaws, I'll happily point out. But, like, honestly, like, I walked away from that game... like, that's what's so weird, right? Like, I walked away from that game being like, games will never look better than this. And, like, Uncharted 4 looks way better. And, and it's
well,
like,
there's also, and I implore people to do this with all media now, which is almost nearly impossible with reactionary culture that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you're experiencing something and when you finish something, give it a minute.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let it sit in a little bit. Like, for me, the more I've thought about Uncharted 4, the more I've enjoyed a lot of it, and the more I've disliked things that I, even in the moment, was okay with. Pull back a little bit and think about things, you know? Like, I think Uncharted 3 was one of those games where I finished it and I was like, this is phenomenal. And as time passed, some of the flaws started showing themselves a little more. But then I do really miss a lot of the sort of over-the-top set pieces in that game. Even, like, the spider stuff's ridiculous. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's hard, like, weirdly getting introspective and inside baseball a little bit. Like, it's hard to play a game the way it should be played for us, right? Because it's like, I have this copy of this game for like 3 days and someone else is going to need it. And it's that thing where, like, if I get frustrated by a puzzle, I have to finish it because I have to keep
going.
And
we had to record this on Monday.
Yeah.
And so it was like, well, Andrew and I had to play 7-8 hours straight yesterday, which is not like, some people are going to play the game that way. But, you know, if I was playing normally, I'd play for three or four hours. And
I played,
go outside.
Yeah. I played the game in 2 7-hour sittings.
Yeah.
Yep.
Over the course of a weekend, basically. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, that does color how I experience a game like this, because when I'm like, oh, man, the puzzles go on forever, it's like, well, no, when you can walk away from them and break it up between two sittings,
maybe they're not that bad. Maybe I thought of that because I was on hour 6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I do want to caveat it with that. Like, I don't know. I think what I feel like I would tell people about this game is, like, if you loved Uncharted 2 and 3, I really don't think you're going to be super disappointed about this game. If you hated Uncharted 2 and 3, I don't think this is going to turn you around.
Yeah.
It's actually, like, fascinating because we reported about a lot of the struggles and problems leading up and during development of this game, studio departures and rewrites and just sort of
cast
narrative.
Cast changes, staff changes.
Cast changes, staff changes, the sort of narrative diagonals and stuff like that happened. And by and large, I'm kind of wondering why, because I think what we got at the end wasn't really something that was so completely different from the franchise. Mm-hmm. I won't say it's by the numbers, but it is an Uncharted game. I don't really feel like I'm trying to sit there and try to justify. Were two people being like, we want to make this game. And Amy Hennig was like, we want to make this game. And they fought in the middle. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we got the fourth Uncharted game. The fifth Uncharted game, really. The sixth, if you count the car game.
No one counts that. No. The seventh, if you count Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Don't count that.
Or all the Game Loft knockoffs that came out to iOS. Like, Unfounded.
Unshorted.
Starring Donnie Drake.
Who do you think? Do you think Alan Tudyk played Raph or Rafe?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think that character was like a little bit funnier? It was him.
Ooh,
that's a really good point. And he's an interesting character. He almost feels like a tech dude, a tech bro version of Seth Green.
Andrew Goldfarb.
Shops at Abercrombie. So if you dislike all the things I'm describing, then he makes a great villain.
I'm excited to hear more stories about what this game could have been, hear more theories, go more in depth. We're gonna have a full spoiler cast after the game comes out. But check out Lucy's review, her written review, her video review. Check out once the game comes out, I guess on Tuesday, depending on how time works.
Yeah.
Check out our wiki. Miranda and John have been slaving away at it.
They're finding every treasure.
That you don't have to.
Yeah, they're capturing a lot of stuff on crushing, which is like
Jesus.
Incredibly hard. Because, again, no spoilers, but there's a thing you can do in the game where you can tag enemies for stealth, which is really cool.
So you know where everyone is.
So you know where they are. That doesn't work on crushing.
Yeah.
A lot of the you basically don't really have a lot of combat options on crushing because you're best off stealthing through everything, because just firing off a single gun means you have 100 rugged-ass dudes trying to kill you.
And I would imagine ammo is very hard to come by.
Yes.
Also, pro tip, if you can't find a brick, throw a grenade.
Yeah, throw a grenade, wake him up. I think what Goldfarb said was really interesting about marathoning through the game. I kind of implore you guys to play this game like you would, like you'd watch a TV show you really care about. And I don't mean like Daredevil, where you're like, I got to marathon through this thing by Sunday.
Yeah, but watch it like a weekly show, not a Netflix show.
Yeah, play it for an hour or so a night, because I think when you play too much in one chunk, some of the flaws start popping up and you really start getting fatigued by the repetition and redundancy.
Right now, we're that thing that used to pop up in the weed. It's like, why not take a break?
Yeah.
No, it's the reason why Game of Thrones feels different than a Netflix show is because every week everyone comes in on Monday and we're reflecting on a single episode,
right,
as opposed to we come in on a Monday and we're like, oh, well, that was 12 hours of stuff.
Yeah.
There's the ninjas that Daredevil fought, and then the Punisher was kind of cool, I think.
But, you know, that being said, had this game been 8 to 10 hours like the other Uncharted games were, this wouldn't be even a conversation. I would say marathon through it and walk away happy, which is what I used to do with the other games. So, I don't know. This is a really interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to see what other people think of it.
Me too.
What people think about it, like you said, a month later at the end of the year when Game of the Year stuff comes along, because it's going to be obviously nominated for a ton of stuff.
Yeah, at the very least, there's not going to be a single person who owns a PS4 who's playing this game who isn't constantly hitting that share button to capture.
Yeah.
I mean, I ended up with a folder of just beautiful
pornography,
just visual Uncharted pornography.
Yeah.
Just like trees and grass. Like there were times where I was just like, look at that rock.
I'm wowed by the simplest, stupidest stuff.
Also, playing through it, does anyone need a PlayStation Neo this fall?
I was saying, this is Uncharted 4 is the strongest argument against a PlayStation 4.5.
Save it for the full show.
Thank you so much for watching or listening. You can find us on Twitter. Brian is at Agent Bizzle. Andrew is at Garfep. I'm at McBiggity. If you like the podcast, if you're listening on iTunes, rate us. Write a review. You can find us on YouTube. We have a new YouTube, a Beyond branded YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/IGNBeyond. That's where we're going to put up full episodes. We're going to put up clips. We're going to do Let's Plays with a couple of us just playing through maybe some of those old Essential 50 games. Remember that?
Yeah.
We stopped doing that.
We'll bring that back.
Yeah, let's do that again.
We'll have Brian's a cappella version of the Uncharted song.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
The full version. It's 13 minutes long.
We're going to get a lot of YouTube strikes on it.
Yeah, it's produced by Hans Zimmer and Junkie XL.
Wow.
Yeah, I got big names. DJ Tiesto. Tiesto is doing a remix.
Wow, I don't think anyone calls him DJ Tiesto.
Do they not?
Tiestical. Also, download our PlayStation 4 app. That's the best way to watch videos on IGN.
Why does nobody call him that? Isn't that what he does? That's his name?
Daniel James Tiesto.
They just say Tiesto?
Well, because the DJ, his first name is actually DJ, which is like...
Shut up.
Yeah.
DJ Tiesto.
Really?
I doubt Tiesto is his last name.
That's like if my first name was podcast host. What? Anyway.
It would also be weird because podcasts didn't exist back then. Thank you. We're sorry. Stick around. Next week, we'll be back with a full new episode of Beyond, plus a full spoiler cast where we talk about who's kissing, who's not kissing, and why.
And who kisses twice and who dies twice.
Wow.
No one
died. I don't think you can die twice.
You only live twice.
You only live once.
That's true.
That's the theme of podcast Beyond.
The tagline under Uncharted 4. You know what we should have done is, just like Uncharted, this should have ended a long time ago.
Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.